on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and I'll be with you on this Tuesday, September 30th, 2025. Now, it is 9:30, September 30th. That means a couple things. It means it's my mother's birthday, so happy birthday to her. But it also means we are officially through Q3, officially through the month of September, and headed in, turning the corner towards the end of the year. And what a year it has been. Certainly there have been a lot of changes. There's been a lot that has been noise, a lot that has been signals, a lot to sift through. Ups, downs, high volatility, low volatility. And through it all, we here at InvestTalk see our singular mission as trying to help you decipher what is going on in the world, to figure out how it's going to affect you, how it's going to affect your finances, how it's going to affect your portfolios, and how it's going to affect how you can achieve your financial goals. And in order to do that, Justin and I come here each and every day, 5 days a week, except on holidays. And we bring a mixture of educational and actionable material to the table. But you are the most important part of this show. Your contributions through your voicemails, through your questions over on our InvestTalk YouTube channel, your reviews, and also by bringing more people in to the InvestTalk family is the most important part of this show. And so, as always, before we talk about today's market performance, before we run down those show topics, why don't we tackle this caller question now?
Big fan here from Orange County. Just wanted to ask you about UTI, Universal Technical Institute. Just wondering if you think it's a good idea to load up more on this and hold it long term. Curious to hear your thoughts and appreciate your all the work that you guys do. Thanks so much.
Universal Technical Institute, ticker UTI, is exactly what it sounds like. It is a college, a post-secondary education, and they focus on technical and trade skills. So they run multiple brands. They have the Technical Institute, the Concord Career Colleges. They also have the Motorcycle Mechanics Institute, the Marine Mechanics Institute, the NASCAR Technical Institute. And its programs include automotive, diesel, collision repair, marine, aviation mechanics, HVAC, electrical trades, and on and on and on. This company is headquartered in Phoenix, Arizona. And from a performance perspective, well, pretty strong Q2 and Q3 results, including a raise in guidance, 12.6% year-over-year revenue growth in Q2 2025. It has had a lot of this growth because of the massive growth in demand for technical and trade education. They had a program expansion that has worked very well. The industry itself has massive tailwinds because there's more technical jobs now. EV battery maintenance, electrical power infrastructure. We just did a webinar about AI and talked about all the picks and shovels and investments and ways you can invest in the theme outside of the big tech companies. And we talked about AI infrastructure, electrical power infrastructure. All of this demand for energy has created a demand for jobs that help create this infrastructure and maintain this infrastructure. And so this company's up 100%. Over the past 52 weeks, it's up 26.60% year to date. It is now, as a technical college, at the upper end of its five-year range, 34.2 times forward-looking earnings, 16.9 times price to cash flow, 2.3 times price to sales. How's its balance sheet look? Well, it's only got about $269 million in debt on a $1.84 billion market cap company. It's got $167 million cash on hand, so nearly half of its debt covered by its cash. At the same time, though, right, there are a bit of rising costs, labor, facilities, equipment. These could squeeze margins, especially in its low margin programs. There's that valuation sensitivity with that very high forward-looking priced earnings. The stock is somewhat priced for a lot of growth, so any underperformance or missed execution could certainly lead to some substantial downside. And its margins, although expanding, are still pretty small, right? It's 2024, 5.3% net margin, though that's the highest it's been in about 5 years, projected to grow a bit to 7.1%, but there is not a lot of room there compared to some other businesses. And so, although I do like the tailwind here for growth, it's priced for a whole heck of a lot of growth, 34.2 times forward-looking price earnings. So I would, especially because over the past 3 months, it's down 4%, maybe on a bit of a downward trend after this massive surge over the past 52 weeks. I'd keep it on my watch list for now, a bit too expensive for me. That is Universal Technical Institute, ticker UTI. I got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and it all starts off with my main focus point, which concerns this story, the shrinkflation problem, how you're paying more for less at the grocery store. In this episode, we will reveal how manufacturers secretly decrease the size of products like coffee and paper towels, resulting in a hidden price hike that contributes to overall inflation. We'll look into policy options for increasing consumer transparency. Also, the government is set to shut down at the end of the day today, as a deal has yet to be reached as we record this podcast. What does it all mean for the U.S. economy? We'll also touch on the credit market, which is, it's moving along, it's humming, but Wall Street is they're a bit worried. So we'll touch on that. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about how some investors who bought property for rentals have become landlords accidentally, and they're trying to get out. And what does that mean for the property market? We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Roth IRAs and MLPs, another on Dolly Varden Silver Corporation, ticker DVS, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now, headed into our first break, please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening via our live stream or possibly on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, call now at 888-99-CHARP. Hang on, because we'll come back about today's activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
What do you think's a good price?
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
And I was wondering, from your standpoint, is there a downside in buying fractional shares versus whole shares?
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
OKE is the simple, we like the business. I will say we've trimmed it a bit and cut it as a lower weighting.
Now, while gold is hitting these record highs, it's driven by the safe haven demand, by central bank buying across the board.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey, Justin and Luke, this is Josh in North Carolina.
This is Marlo from New York City area.
Let's go take a live call, Sam from San Jose.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk.
Great insights. Thank you.
888-99-CHART.
Did you know a single finger prick at home can give you over 180 personalized insights into how to improve your health and slow your aging? As soon as you try the True Age plus True Health test by True Diagnostic, it will show you things you've never learned from a standard doctor's visit or your annual physical. The True Age plus True Health test is a simple at-home kit that gives you powerful insights so you can feel better longer. True Health looks at over 105 biomarkers tied to your nutritional, metabolic, immune, and cognitive health. True Age measures 75 plus biomarkers to reveal your biological age, your pace of aging, and the age of key organ systems. It doesn't just give you a single number. It shows you how your heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. Together, the combo gives you a complete picture of your health today, along with personalized recommendations that will give you the largest bang for buck improvements to your health and to slow down aging. It's all done at home with just a quick, painless finger prick. If you're serious about living healthier and longer, visit TrueDiagnostic.com and use my code INVEST for 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code INVEST for 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks finishing mostly higher, ending near their session highs. The Dow up 18 basis points. S&P 500 up 41. NASDAQ up 30. Russell 2000 just barely positive, up 5 basis points. With that close, the Dow finishing at a fresh all-time high, S&P just below its record close. But major indices really all posting solid gains for not just the month, but also for Q3. Outperformers today included pharma, life sciences, hospitals, multis, P&C insurers, staple retailers, and media. Big tech, pretty mixed, though NVIDIA faring particularly well today. And underperformers included energy, banks, credit cards, restaurants, and home builders. On the bond side, Treasuries a bit mixed. The curve steepening just slightly, yields up 1 to 2 basis points at the front end. The dollar index down 10 basis points. Gold finishing up 50 basis points, reversing some of the earlier declines we saw at the beginning of the day. And crude oil ended down 1.7% after falling nearly 3.5% on Monday on the news of OPEC Plus's output. Few dynamics in focus today. Of course, the looming government shutdown has received a lot of attention, but frankly, Wall Street really pricing in and downplaying concerns about the economic risks. It would not be the first time the government is shut down. Typically, they are short-lived events. Biggest issues for the market, it seemed to be the delay, though, in September's employment report on Friday, should the government be shut down. On the economic calendar, not a lot of big directional drivers today. The JOLTS job openings was largely in line. More signs of cooling from housing prices and a bit softer consumer confidence and regional manufacturing data. Again, not really changing market sentiment too much. There's a bit of scrutiny surrounding consumer finance names, though, particularly those exposed to the lower income segments following the recent bankruptcy headlines within that sector. And pharma was a big gainer today, with some pricing deals with the White House helping to avoid tariffs. Digging in a bit to that economic data, the JOLTS job openings did beat while the July print was revised slightly higher. The quits rate at 1.9% has fallen to its lowest levels since December, while the layoff rate remains unchanged, adding more support to the low churn labor market narrative. So Denver Conference Board consumer confidence missed, though the labor market differential, those who say the jobs are plentiful versus those who say they're hard to get, narrowed a bit further. At the same time, inflation expectations fell 30 basis points to about 5.8%. Still sounds pretty high. In fact, it's still higher than the level of 5% from the beginning of the year. And September Chicago PMI posted an unexpected decline today, July FHFA home prices index slipped as well. July S&P Case-Shiller home prices index fell by a bit less than expected. A lot of data today, but again, not much that is actually moving the market in a big way. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, looks like we get ADP private payrolls and ISM manufacturing for September, as well as construction spending for August out on Wednesday. Thursday will bring us initial claims and August factory orders and ISM services, the highlight on Friday with the expected government shutdown delaying the employment report. Alrighty, let's keep things moving. Oh, I was going to get to a YouTube question, but it looks like we have a live call. Our friend Gene from Lafayette, how can I help you?
Well, I got a question about a stock symbol is ABTC.
So we're looking at ABTC. Which is American Bitcoin Corporation. American Bitcoin Corporation engages in the management of a Bitcoin accumulation platform. It's a $1.1 billion market cap company. Its price chart going back to 2019 is not very pretty, but year to date, it's up 236.41%. And essentially what it does is it's this infrastructure company, right? It's the majority owned by Hut 8 Corp and leverages Hut 8's infrastructure, so data centers, ASIC hosting, to scale mining operations. It's a Bitcoin miner. Now, its NASDAQ debut was, again, several years ago. It traded at a very high price, and it's been slowly and steadily moving downward ever since. As I mentioned, year-to-date up 236.41%, up 97.83% in the past 52 weeks. Revenue growth looks pretty volatile, though I do imagine it probably is as volatile as the asset class that it is exposed to, because you see revenue growing from 10 to 20 billion in 2021, then down to 6.8 billion in 2023, now peaking up again in 2024, as you saw the crypto run at about 20.539 billion. Same time, margins, though, pretty negative, in the negative 100% range here. Now, it has a big partnership, and that has, in a way, allowed it to have some sort of cost efficiency there. The company's expanded its mining operations. It's increased its hash rate significantly from what I can see. There is a large institutional presence, like I said, within this company as well. But you do have a lot of Bitcoin price risk and volatility inherent to this, right? You also have questions of the efficiency of mining operations at a time when Bitcoin, at times when Bitcoin is volatile. You have a relatively uncertain crypto regulatory framework that is still being put into place, SEC oversight, taxation rules, all these things. And so this is really going to be exposure to Bitcoin. I would say if you want to get exposed to Bitcoin, why not just buy Bitcoin? Now we're moving into breaks, still to come. My main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now. 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about a topic called shrinkflation. Now, shrinkflation is also known as product downsizing. Essentially, you're getting less quantity for the same or nearly the same price. And that raises the per unit cost. And this phenomenon, it quietly boosts inflation since consumers pay more per ounce, they pay more per unit, even if the sticker price itself doesn't rise. Now, downsizing peaked in about 2015. It was pretty rare in 2020 to 2021, but this resurgence happened again in 2022 as inflation spiked. Overall, impact on inflation is pretty small since only a fraction of a tracked good can be downsized. Let's say you buy a bag of Doritos, and the Doritos now, instead of having 20 chips, it has 19 chips. But they're still charging you the same price. That is what shrinkflation is. Interestingly enough, in order to measure this, the Bureau of Labor Statistics sends in economists, trained people, into these warehouses. And I'm not kidding you. They measure chips in bags. They measure the length of hot dogs, the weight of hamburgers, to do all these things to try and accurately figure out how much inflation is out there in grocery prices and anything that would be in a grocery warehouse. Now, manufacturers choose downsizing over price hikes to protect sales, right? They assume that consumers, that you and me, won't really notice as much. Who really counts the amount of chips they have in their Dorito bag? And studies show, understandably, that shoppers, they tolerate downsizing. They tolerate it more than outright price increases, especially from trusted brands. Maybe, if only because they aren't noticing. Less than 5% of surveyed products were downsized. But popular high-volume items tended to be hit the hardest. Why? Because it's the hardest to notice. Paper goods, toilet paper, paper towels, and household staples like coffee were among the most affected. Nobody who is listening has ever counted the amount of paper towels they have on their paper towel roll. I would bet my life on that. Now, per unit price increases from shrinkflation, about 12% for paper towels, up to 32% for coffee. You certainly would notice if the cost of your bag of coffee went up 32%. But if they change the size of it, maybe you won't. Downsizing disproportionately impacts households that buy these items regularly and also in bulk. Transparency and fixes to transparency could potentially include mandatory downsizing labels, standard unit price labeling, consumer education acknowledgement of what companies are doing. In fact, France already mandates shrinkflation disclosures. And so some US states now are starting to require unit price labels. But these rules are varying pretty widely. Still, at a time when investors are concerned about the cost of things, about rising sticker prices, one thing they may not know is you have to sometimes look beyond the sticker to see what you're really paying for the products that you love. Alrighty, every day now we receive questions from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Here's one that just came in the other day from Jim Leahy, and it's on ticker KBR. It says, do you think KBR is worth buying at the current prices? Well, KBR, formerly Kellogg Brown & Root, is an American global engineering, procurement, construction, and government services company. They operate across various sectors: energy, infrastructure, aerospace, defense, intelligence, mission support, all sorts of categories. In recent years, though, right, they've shifted towards the higher tech and mission critical services, science, engineering, rather than purely heavy contracting work. Now, it recently announced that it is going to spin off Mission Technology Solutions, MTS, one of its business units, as a separate public company, leaving its core as new KBR, focusing on that sustainable technology solutions. Now, that one particular unit accounted for about 7% revenue growth in Q2 2025, so pretty substantial. They got a big backlog of operations here. Now, year to date, this company's down 18%, down 27% over the past 52 weeks. It's been on a downward march since, say, November of 2024, so really since the election. Now, its government contract, government solutions, 76% of its business, 53% of its revenue comes from the United States. A lot of contract money from NASA. They won a contract from NASA valued at $2.46 billion, with the extension potential for $3.6 billion. Large international energy projects, large contracts with government entities. And so as you see government spending paring back a bit, especially within the science technology pipeline, what you're seeing is the price paring back as well. It's becoming a bit cheaper, 11.4 times forward-looking price to earnings, near its low of 10.7 times, 12.6 times price to cash flow. Its revenue growth slowing to a near crawl, down to less than 5%, probably about 3.5% from 2024 to 2025. And so the outlook doesn't look too great given the prevailing conditions under which this company needs to thrive, right? They need large contracts. They need government contracts. It makes up 76% of their business, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, so I don't really see a way out of this downward trend. I would definitely keep my eye on it, but I don't think now is a good time. Ticker KBR, KBR Inc. Headed into a break. When we come back, more answers to your questions, a couple more stories to go over, and hopefully, another live call. Feel free to give me a call anytime throughout the show or anytime, really any time of day. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24-7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got another live call. Richard from Santa Clarita listening on AM 1220. How can we help you?
Hi, Luke. Just wanted to say I've sure gotten a good education, I think, from InvestTalk. I'm a long-time listener, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we thank you for being a long-time listener.
My question is on the impact of the lowering of interest rates and the market and the economy and so forth. We know that, Jerome Powell has explained, where he's coming from in the Federal Reserve based on inflation in the labor market And also understand, you know, the importance of the independence of the Fed. But the president has made it quite clear that he would want to see interest rates lowered considerably more than what, you know, the Fed did recently. My question is on the wisdom of what the president, his position in terms of significantly lowering interest rate. You know, I remember Steve talking about the debt that we had, you know, after war, you know, last time it was, you know, this bad. And basically, I remember him saying, we need to get out of the debt, you know, inflate our way out of this. And one of the impacts, I think, you know, concerns about really lowering interest rates is inflation. But I wonder if you could comment, is, causing more inflation and going in that direction, is that the way to handle the horrendous debt we have? What would be, you know, the impact of significantly lowering the interest rates? I'm sure there's an upside and downside to everything. I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about that and explain how that may work in terms of also dealing with our big national debt.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a very, very complicated answer. So let's take a step back first and say, I would guarantee, I'd bet a lot of money, that any president would really like interest rates to be lowered during their administration. The reason being, because a president is inherently really concerned about the performance within their 4 years or their 8 years, right? And so lowering interest rates does a couple things. It makes borrowing costs cheaper, not just for businesses, but mortgages, auto loans, credit cards. Housing demand tends to rebound. Businesses can finance projects. You can have lower interest expenses. It frees up cash. It essentially heats up an economy. Now, the problem is in the long run, if an economy runs too hot, you end up with inflationary pressures. You end up with a potentially weaker dollar. You end up with a bunch of things that can lead to sustained periods of poor economic activity. And so the Fed typically takes the long lens in which they have to manage labor and employment with inflation expectations, right? And inflation itself. And so the problem is what happens when you overheat the economy? Now, your question about, okay, can we inflate away the debt? Kind of. I mean, inflation does reduce the real value of existing debt. It makes it easier for governments to repay them in cheaper dollars, especially if wages and tax revenue rises with inflation, then the government collects more nominal revenue to cover interest costs. But at the same time, bondholders are losing purchasing power. So they are going to demand, as debt gets rolled over, higher interest rates. I think the core of it is, and I think people have a little bit of a misunderstanding here, is how much control the Fed has. Because the Fed sets the overnight lending rate, which is a very, very short-term rate. There's a reason why, historically speaking, the effect that a Fed cut of rates on mortgages, kind of inconclusive. Sometimes rates go up, sometimes rates go down. Like anything else, rates are market. It doesn't matter what the Fed is lending out overnight to banks for. If investors are all of a sudden saying, you know what, there's too much debt being borrowed here. You're just rolling it over on the credit card. We don't care what banks are able to borrow at. We aren't going to take on this level of risk. And I think that's the thing that investors have to keep in mind here, is that there isn't some omnipotent Fed that sets a benchmark rate that everybody else adheres to. At the end of the day, it's a market like any other. And market forces are going to decide what rates are going to be. Thanks for the call. All righty, let's pivot back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a call that came in earlier from Miami.
I just wanted to get your take on a stock, DVS, Dolly Varden Silver. I had been following them since they went from the OTC to the New York Stock Exchange and got them at a really low price. I really like this company because they have little debt. Eric Sprott was an early investor in them. And they are silver and also some gold mining opportunities in the Kitsault region of Canada. So with silver kind of following along and making a push, I think this is like an interesting long-term play, and I'm already in as a position, but I want to add a little bit more. I'm just curious your thoughts. Thank you very much for listening on the podcast.
Now, its core assets include, as was mentioned, that Kitsault Valley project. It also has holds in big bulk properties, so copper and gold potential, and has acquired additional properties to expand its footprint across Canada. Now, it is currently in an exploration stage. It's not yet in full production. And so because of that, its financials are reflecting a lot of those losses, right? Its return on equity, negative 22.7%. As you can see, if you look at its revenue, just about zero here. Now, in anticipation of this coming online, in anticipation of moving into the revenue phase, company's up 55.42% over the past 52 weeks, up 84.79% year to date. Now, in September, they reported pretty strong result in terms of their expansion and expanded drilling program, their acquisitions, financing and capital raises have gone pretty well, but there's still a lot to be seen here, right? What are future drill results going to be? As an exploration firm, they need capital infusion. So how much dilution are you going to get as a shareholder with new issuances? The company also hinges on commodity price cycles, gold, silver, copper. Now, we talked about all the reasons why gold and copper specifically are primed to do pretty well over the next couple of years. Political instability, fear out there in the marketplace, the amount of copper that's going to be demanded for green energy revolution, for AI infrastructure, all these things. So cyclically, they probably are going to stand to benefit there. But you also have to monitor what's going on with this business internally, and that understand exploration stocks tend to be volatile. They tend to be news sensitive. And so if you want to invest in this, expect very sharp moves, especially for a company that really can't control much because they're a pre-revenue enterprise here. So I think if you want to get some exposure to the silver space, there are better ways to do it, especially given the fact that they aren't able to generate that revenue control and deal with some compressing margin. They're really going to be at the whim of wherever the cycle is once they start generating that revenue. So I would probably look elsewhere. Very high risk, but potentially very high reward. Dolly Varden Silver Corporation, ticker DVS. Looks like we got another live call from Thomas from Santa Cruz. Has a question about MOD. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, I'm calling about MOD as well as VRT. I'm looking to buy it. I listened to the webinar today, and I was already looking into HVAC companies. And basically, after listening to you guys talk, I mean, I'm very interested in getting into one of them. So I was basically calling about these two to see good entry price for these and see if these align with kind of what you were getting at in your webinar. Thank you so much.
Yeah, of course. Well, thanks for coming to the webinar. And thanks for calling in. I did mention if anyone had any questions, because we ran out of time with all the questions, the call in. So I'm glad somebody listened. But Modine Manufacturing is it's a U.S. company, and they specialize in thermal management solutions. So it's an HVAC company, right? Their products include heat exchangers, HVAC refrigeration systems. And because heat and thermal transfer is so critical in vehicles, industrial machinery, climate control, and also the data center business, Modine's business is a bit sensitive to CapEx, but they've really benefited a lot, right? They have grown pretty significantly in terms of revenue from 2020, from $1.9 billion through the pandemic cycle, projected to be about $3 billion this year. At the same time, margins expanding a bit, 6.7 is where it sat in 2024, projected to be about 8.5% this year. Net income growing at about 50% year over year. And the price reflects that. Year to date, up 22.53%. 3 months, up 44.32%. They have, like I said, been a big beneficiary of this industrial cycle and CapEx. They've had pretty decent product innovation, gains in thermal efficiency, lighter weight materials. The macro regulatory environment looks pretty solid as well from the energy efficiency and emissions standpoint, loosening of some building codes, some regulation, trying to help build these things. And they have a big order book. They have visibility into their order book. They provide their engineering systems are often built to order. So, you know, within the custom design space, they also do that as well. This is a name we have looked at on and off for quite some time here. But, you know, you got to remember, this is a little bit of margin pressure on this from raw material input costs. Technologically, they do stay ahead in terms of thermal efficiency. Their product line is very good. You know, their balance sheet looks pretty decent as well. It's $377 million in debt on a $7.6 billion market cap company. And it's trading at a pretty decent valuation relative to where it's been. I mean, it's still 26.2 times forward-looking earnings, but a lot of these HVAC companies are going to be, you know, relatively expensive. Now, I believe the other question was about VRT, correct?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Specifically VRT, Vertiv Holdings is another one that we've gotten questions on. It's up 32.79% year to date, up 51.63% over the past 52 weeks. It's a $54 billion market cap company, so quite a bit bigger. Little bit of debt, only $3 billion in debt, but you know, they got $1.2 billion in cash on hand. Now, they design, manufacture, and service critical infrastructure, especially in data centers. They support a lot of these, digital operations. So they have these power systems, again, cooling systems, rack, cabinet, infrastructure. Really, both of these companies represent the picks and shovel businesses that we actually talked about in our webinar today. Now, for this company, there's a bit of a concern about slowing order book, more so than the other company, MOD. But revenue growth is solid too, right? From $8 billion to $10 billion, 2024 into 2025. Net income tripling in that time. Margins a bit better, 14.8% net margin where it's projected to be this year. But at the same time, a little bit more expensive. 31.7 times forward-looking earnings, 17.5 times price to book. Now, from a diversification perspective, about 78% of their business is critical digital infrastructure, whereas, you know, the climate solutions business is about 56% of Modine. So it really comes down to, do you want to be a bit more concentrated on data center CapEx, or do you want to be spread out a bit more? Do you want a larger company? That would be VRT. Do you want a smaller company that may be primed for a bit more growth? MOD. I think they're both good companies. They're both companies we have been looking at. They're both a bit expensive, but again, really comes down to what you'd want. Do you want that focus in data centers? I'd go with VRT. If you want a bit more wide angle with a bit more diversification, I'd probably go with MOD. Thanks for the call. All right, let's talk about a shutdown. There are just hours left before a possible government shutdown, and both parties remain deadlocked, trading blame over failed negotiations. Federal agencies will lose funding starting at Wednesday at 12:01 a.m., triggering closures of parks, museums, many offices, essential workers, so military or traffic controllers must stay on the job, but won't receive pay until funding resumes. Social Security and Medicare, they will continue, but payments could potentially face delays. Now, shutdowns are less frequent now than they were in the 80s and 90s, but they have tended to last a bit longer. 2018 and 2019, the government was shut down for 35 days. Now, it sounds scary, but economic impacts, they're usually pretty limited. However, they could be a bit worse this time. Why? Because when the government is shut down, reports do not go out. There will be a delay in the release of key data, jobs, inflation, wages, things that market participants and the Fed in particular are looking for before they decide their next move. Data gaps can really complicate the Fed's already contentious interest rate decisions. Now, financial markets often shrug, right? The S&P rose today. It rose 10% during the last shutdown. And the dollar historically weakens, as frankly, it's a bit embarrassing that we can't come to a deal to keep a government open. Certainly, you see investors want to leave to more green pastures in these types of situations. But also about 900,000 federal workers, 40% of the workforce, will be furloughed, temporarily pushing up unemployment. Now, past shutdowns saw quick rebounds with back pay, but this time job losses and hiring freezes, they may linger. OMB Director Russell Vaught is urging agencies to treat the shutdown as a chance to permanently cut staff and programs. Now, legal hurdles exist, but the administration may move quickly and may make changes that are hard to reverse, even if later ruled unlawful. Certainly, anytime the government shuts down, it's not something to be proud of. It's not a good thing. But as we've seen in shutdowns past, they tend to be short-lived and the economic damage tends to be pretty limited. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we will look into this story. Roth or bust, the $145,000 401k catch-up rule change for 2026. Starting next year, workers age 50 and older who earned over $145,000 in the previous year will be required to make their 401k catch-up contributions on after-tax Roth basis. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls. This is our final break, so if you want to talk to me, give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I was wondering, with a Roth IRA or a regular IRA, if you buy MLPs, do you still have to deal with K-1s? Or do K-1s not apply if it's in an IRA tax deferred account? Thanks so much for answering my question.
So in a Roth IRA, investing in an MLP will still generate that K-1 each year. It'll go to your custodian. And if the Roth IRA share of the UPTI from all K-1s is under 1,000, you're fine. No taxes are triggered. But if it's greater than 1,000, well, the Roth IRA still must file that form and you got to pay taxes out of the Roth IRA assets, even though Roths are otherwise tax exempt. The reality is, you're not going to get away from it from the tax man just because you're holding it in the IRA or the Roth IRA, right? This happens in both traditional and Roths, even though Roths are usually tax-free. That's why MLPs are usually better to hold in a regular brokerage account and why people often buy MLP ETFs or mutual funds instead of holding them in those accounts. Complicated question. Thanks for the call. Before we head off, I mentioned how U.S. credit markets are running hot, right? Investors are piling into corporate debt, even though yields are nearing multi-decade lows. And that's because the hunger for bonds has really summoned a Wall Street warning that markets are vulnerable to shocks, right? They're priced to perfection. There were two pretty sudden bankruptcies, Tricolor and auto parts maker First Brands, and it got bond investors a bit scared. It raised some red flags. Howard Marks Smoketree cautions that excess optimism often breeds poor quality lending. The worst loans are made at the best of times. It makes sense. If times are good, you don't think things are going to be bad. The terms of your loan may be a little bit more loose. A Barclays analyst likened the situation to Star Wars' trash compactor scene, with the risks compressing on all sides, even though risks in that scene were compressing on two sides, not all sides, but we'll leave it at that. Now, investment-grade spreads have shrunk a bit, just 74 percentage points over treasuries, that tightest since 1998. Junk spreads are hovering near 2007 lows, and investors expect the Fed a rate cut to push yields even lower. That expectation has fueled a record $210 billion in investment-grade bond issuances in the month of September. And it's not just the issuance side. Buyout activity is heating up, with Silver Lake in talks for a $50 billion takeover of EA, which was announced, could be potentially the largest LBO ever. Now, Tricolor's collapse exposed some risks in asset-backed debt and the buy-here, pay-here lending model, where weak oversight leaves a lot of room for abuse. And rising defaults aren't just limited to autos. You're seeing private credit is flashing warning signs, with loans nearing $2 trillion and payment-in-kind deals on the rise. Roughly 11% of business development company loans now pay interest in IOUs rather than cash. And Fitch's private credit default rate hit 9.5% in July. So the big question is, can inflation ease in the labor market hold long enough for the Fed to meaningfully cut to relieve pressure? Or will the hot credit market tip into tomorrow's default wave? Now, I want to mention, for those of you who did not join us, we had well over 100 people join us for our InvestTalk webinar, where we went over AI, not just what the theme has been over the past couple of years, but how you can better invest into it while managing and hedging risks. We talked about the picks and shovel businesses, the electric infrastructure, the industrial infrastructure, and various sectors across sectors, how the benefits of the AI revolution and all of this CapEx may benefit different companies outside of your traditional themes. We had plenty of great questions. We included the questions as well in our webinar recording. Now, if you weren't lucky enough, fortunate enough to have the time to join us for our webinar and you really wanted to give it a listen, give it a watch, it will be available on our YouTube channel in the coming days. I haven't checked. It might be available now. Either way, keep an eye out for when it comes available on our YouTube channel. Just head over to InvestTalk and type InvestTalk with two T's. I'm Luke Guerrero, and Justin and I thank you for joining us for another episode of Invest Talk. If today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and whether it all really is working together, we would love to speak with you. At KPP Financial, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews. We want to help bring at least a little bit of clarity and confidence to your financial lives. It's free, no commitment, it's confidential. Just go over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. I also encourage you to tell your friends and family members, maybe just one friend, one family member, about our free podcast downloads, which you can get, as you know, at iTunes and Spotify. And watch out for those videos on YouTube. We do post YouTube-specific content over there. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.